Listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
It's a roughage this morning for your brain on the Tyranny Response Network. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. So glad you've joined us. We're going to have a special guest on the line arriving momentarily. Chuck Baldwin, who was the vice presidential candidate with the Constitution Party, will be joining us for the entirety of, or the rest of the show this morning. A lot of interesting things have happened in the news. I want to get back to discussing with Chuck, I think, when he gets on this Rudolph quote, as well as a couple quotations from Francis Schaeffer. So it should be a really great show this morning. I was reading the Times Examiner, which you all should get, by the way. The Times Examiner should be weekly in your mailbox. It's only $20 a year or $25 a year, and you can call Laverl or Bob Dill at 864-268-0576 to get it, 864-268-0576. And we have a number of great columns this week. Of course, I've been my own series on the Christian Views on Rebellion is in its fourth part this week's edition. But Walter Williams has just an excellent article on stupid airport security, which is well worth reading. In fact, we might even read it on Monday's show if we have an opportunity. We also have Liberal Attitudes, a column by Thomas Sowell, which is excellent. And Ben Graydon talking about the South Carolina's Trojan horse. Wow, what a great article this is, showing about what PPIC is all about, the Put Parents in Charge Act that the neocons are trying to throw upon us at the moment. Definitely worth reading. Well, at any rate, we're now attempting to get in touch with Chuck Baldwin, so hold on, folks, and we will, at any time possible, do the best we can to do exactly that. The Tyranny Response Network is experiencing a couple of technical difficulties this morning, simply because we added a new phone line. If you notice, we have a new phone line that's installed for listeners. It's 244-8177, 244-8177. And if you want to call in and talk to Chuck, you need to call that particular phone line. And if you wanted to send your questions or comments by email, you still may do so to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And at any rate, looking forward to hearing your calls and comments where we have Chuck Baldwin on the air with us. And we're going to go ahead and take just a quick break again, and we'll be back in just a minute. Well, hang on a second. Our production staff is still messing with our mice, so we are going to be back in just a quick second as we get back from to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
A wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, which shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it has earned. This is the sum of good government. Thomas Jefferson, in his first presidential inaugural address, 1801.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain speaking. We want to thank you for flying TRN Airways. Now, if you'll just look out of your left side window, you can see the dense clouds of liberal lunacy commonly polluting the airwaves. On the right side, you can see clear skies full of common sense, liberty-minded conversation. Now, as we enter the Christian worldview airspace, we'll be experiencing clear-headed thinking, and we'll soon be reaching logical conclusions. Feel free to recline your seat and enjoy the remainder of the flight. And thank you for flying TRN Airways.
As nations cannot be rewarded or punished in the next world, they must be so in this. By an inevitable chain of causes and effects, Providence punishes national sins by national calamities. George Mason.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177.
liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
Yes, liberalism is not to be gently put aside, but to be hurled, was it cast aside, but to be hurled with great force. And we're doing that here on Christian Worldview today with Dr. John Coben. We have on the line with us a very special guest this morning, somebody we've been very fond of ever since the show began. It's Pastor Chuck Baldwin calling us on the line with us from Florida this morning. Chuck was the former vice presidential candidate for the Constitution Party. And Chuck, we'd like to welcome you this morning to Christian Worldview, and thank you for joining us.
Joe, thank you very much for letting me be on your show today. It's a pleasure.
Yes, thank you. Thanks so much. We're really glad that you could be here with us today. I have a couple of just really fascinating things that came up in the news this morning. I don't know if you saw Rudolph, different quotations this morning off of Fox News. The headlines in the Atlanta paper, out of Atlanta and Fox News said, "Because I believe that abortion is murder, I also believe that force is justified. In an attempt to stop it," Rudolph said in a statement handed out by his lawyers after he entered his pleas to back-to-back court appearances, first in Birmingham in the morning and then in Atlanta in the afternoon. And then he said, "I'm not an anarchist. I have nothing against government or law enforcement in general." And the rambling statement read, "It's solely for the reason that this government has legalized the murder of children that I have no allegiance to, nor do I recognize the legitimacy of this particular government in Washington." What do you think about this comment?
Well, this country was established on certain bedrock principles, and those principles, you know, are that as we as a people have a duty to subscribe to the law, and that none of us have the right to take the law into our own hands, even when we, you know, disagree with it, as I, you know, firmly disagree with the position that our government has allowed to take pertaining to abortion. I mean, I think my position on that is very, very clear, but none of us have the right to single-handedly, on our own, become judge, jury, and executioner. So, you know, as much as I agree in principle with Mr. Rudolph regarding abortion, we have to work within the law, and the idea of becoming a lawbreaker, especially taking human life. I mean, if we are pro-life, how can we turn around and take life and do it outside the law? So, you know, again, I think it's just misguided.
Yeah, it's a great comment you're making. I had an opportunity before you came on the air this morning to discuss a little bit myself this quotation. If a person, for instance, sees someone else as an eyewitness being raped or murdered, he can, under common law and under the principles we hold in the scriptures, intervene on that person's behalf, even if necessary, using lethal force to save the person's life that's being attacked or assaulted, raped, etc. The fundamental problem Randolph had in becoming a vigilante is he was not an eyewitness to the abortions that occur. He acted on hearsay and went outside the rule of law and just went out and started, you know, attacking. And then this Atlanta business of making a statement by, you know, attempting to murder people that had nothing to do with it is absolutely preposterous. So he's obviously twisted, although the problem I see for us as those who are on the so-called radical right or Christians, we agree with his statements to some point, don't we? We think, yeah, the U.S. government is illegitimate and wrongheaded because it allows abortion, and we have no allegiance to this government because they, in the sense that we're philosophically aligned with it because of its actions. But we just don't take to the steps that Randolph, I'm calling him Randolph this morning, Rudolph took them to.
Well, yeah, you know, again, let's understand though that when it comes to abortion, guys like Rudolph have a real problem. And let me explain that. Here you've got a situation where that the chief culprit in the killing of an unborn child is the mother. Now, obviously, the doctor is complicit, and the government is complicit by allowing it under the law.
Right.
The chief culprit here is the mother. No one is forcing her to go on to the doctor's gurney and do this. You know, the government is not like China, where that by law you must abort a child if you already have another child at home, the one-child policy. This is something that the mother is volunteering to do of her own volition. So when you look at the, you know, in terms of culpability, the mother is the person most culpable in the death of this unborn child. So you take that to its logical conclusion and say, okay, so who are we going to execute? You know, who's the person that deserves to be executed here? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, then it's the mother, because she's the most culpable. She's the most guilty. But here's your problem. If you kill the mother, you kill the child. Mm. I mean, you cannot, you see what I'm saying here? This is a huge moral dilemma. And this is why, you know, our founding fathers were so very, very wise in the way they created the law in this country. That, yes, it's based on England's common law, which is based on the scriptures. We understand that. But we also understand the checks and balances and the way things are supposed to work in this country. And, yeah, we're getting away from that, and we need to fight to preserve it. But at the same time, you cannot allow any individual to become a judge, jury, and executioner unto themselves. And that's what Eric Rudolph has done in this case. And his problem is, okay, so he plants a bomb, and he kills a security guard, or he kills a nurse, or he kills a doctor, or whatever the case may be. He still hasn't gone to the heart of the issue. The heart of the issue is the mother.
Yeah.
You know, so what's he going to do? Is he going to kill the mother? You're going to kill the child. So there is no way that morally, ethically, much less legally, you can justify the kind of acts that Eric Rudolph has done.
Just one quick question to clarify, Chuck. Appreciate your position, by the way. It's an excellent commentary. How are they killing the child when the child's already been aborted? Can you clarify what you mean by that when you say you kill the mother or execute the mother, you're going to kill the child as well?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're assuming that the abortion has already taken place, and when you plant a bomb, obviously you don't have any way of knowing who that bomb is going to kill. You don't know. I mean, this is such an arbitrary thing that you could kill a mother who's maybe going in, or you know, she hasn't aborted the baby yet. I mean, how are you going to execute this thing?
Well, that's an interesting
such a way as that you're going to preserve life across the board.
Yeah, that's an interesting comment, Chuck. And really, I wonder why we could ever advocate. And this is what I think some of our listeners and myself were wondering when you said that. Because how can we execute a mother who's just thinking about murdering her child? If she actually hasn't done it, there shouldn't be a death penalty yet.
And you can't be consistent. I mean, that's the whole problem with that is you just cannot be consistent. There is just no way that you can take that approach and apply it to all of the various parties consistently. Not in my view. I am as pro-life as I think anybody is, and I, you know, I'm fighting as, I mean, I've done all the things that most of us do. I mean, I've protested. I've worked for legislation. I've worked for pro-life candidates. Continue to do all that, and we're going to keep working on that. But I certainly don't believe that as Christians, and I have to base on my Christian understanding, is to take the law into my own hand and start killing people in the name of God or in the name of life or in the name of whatever. I don't have the right to do that. God in his word and common law does not give us the right to do that. And for us to take that position is to take us outside the realm of law and the realm that God has established for us as citizens.
Yeah, it's an excellent comment. I really appreciate that. And let's take it to one step further, which is the hypothetical case. We're sort of a deep thinking show. People listen to us because we help Christians and people who love liberty think about issues, and we have a broad base of listeners from even those who are unconverted listening to our voices today as well as those who are believers, trying to understand and grapple with the tough issues of the day. But let's take a hypothetical situation that the nurse that's in there assisting the doctor in performing this act of murder is all of a sudden, converted, and she realizes that she cannot be party to this, and she has to stop it. We would say, I think, that because she's witnessing the murder, at, under the common law, she has the right to stop the abortion from occurring. It doesn't mean she has to use lethal force against the doctor, but she has to, and she could, I suppose, but she has to try to stop him from continuing, or to try to stop the mother, if that's possible. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, what if you are an eyewitness there, right there in the abortuary?
Well, yeah, but how are you suggesting that she do that? I mean, she could obviously talk to the mother and do everything she could to talk her out of that terrible decision. She could obviously, tell the doctor, I am not going to be party to this. And, maybe without her assistance, he would not be able to follow through with his procedure until he was able to replace her, in which case she would have successfully interrupted the procedure.
Well, there's a...
Are you suggesting, though, that she take a scalpel from the table and, thrust it into the neck of the doctor and the mother? No, she doesn't have the right to do that.
Well, that's interesting. Why wouldn't she? Now, I was going to go further and say, what if it's a 6'4" linebacker who went to the special forces and then decided to get a nursing degree and went out? So it's a big guy that's capable of doing this. But if a person's on the street, say your wife's down the street in Florida, and I happen to be visiting, and I have my concealed weapons permit for Florida, and I happen to be packing my .357 Magnum under my belt, and I see three thugs just start gang raping your wife. And I pull out my gun, you would say I'm justified in stopping them by shooting them, even if I happen to kill them. I may not aim to kill them, but just try to stop them. But why would it be any different for the nurse or the big guy who's a nurse in the operating room or the abortuary stopping the doctor? It seems to be the same issue, don't you think?
Well, I think that in the case of the nurse, again, she has the ability to interrupt the procedure by refusing to participate. But again, I keep going back to the fact that in order to carry out this, I don't know what you want to call it. Are you calling it vigilantism? I'm not sure what you want to call it. In order to carry this out, you have to kill the mother.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way around that. And then when we do that, we have taken the life of the person who is the only one really in the position of bringing life, of bearing life. And you can't do that without interrupting the life cycle itself, and that includes the child that would be born in the womb of that mother. So that is a serious moral dilemma that people that are advocating this kind of position, I don't think, are really thinking through. And certainly, I just personally, I just do not see the consistency of that position at all.
Well, I appreciate your point of view there. I take the position, over a number of years of research as I've looked at this, that if you are the eyewitness to the rape on the street or the eyewitness to the abortion, you can take action. It's not vigilantism then, because you're acting in self-defense on behalf of another person. As long as you're acting on hearsay or on emotion only, then it does become vigilantism outside of the rule of law. But in this case, I think she could actually, like you said, thrust the scalpel into the guy, and I think she would probably be justified in doing it. So we may differ slightly on that, but I don't see any difference between that and your wife, in the example, your wife being raped on the street and me defending her. Now, I'm not going to say that, obviously, Rudolph was right. He was dead wrong. What he's done is wicked, and Christians cannot support this sort of activity, even if philosophically we might go along with him to some extent. But I guess I haven't seen much difference, philosophically, theoretically, or you want to call it hypothetically, between that extreme case, which will probably never happen, by the way, of the nurse wanting to defend or any eyewitness in there wanting to defend the baby by stopping the doctor from killing her.
Okay. Again, I keep going back to the fact that in order to be consistent with the application, you have to take the life of the mother. I mean, you just cannot concentrate on the doctor or the staff, or even the law. You have to recognize the culpability of the mother. And, even these people that are advocating violence, You know, I haven't really read or seen a lot about them saying let's go out and find all the women that, you know, are contemplating abortion or maybe who have had abortion at some point in their life. Let's all go to their house and in a mob action. Let's kill them. Yeah. You know, I mean,
no, that would be.
What do you do?
Is
she carrying if she's aborted someone in the past? Is she carrying another child?
No, that would be certainly wrong.
So you're gonna kill the child when you kill the mother in the name of life.
No, that would be certainly wrong. That's a great point. I guess we're thinking of a very unusual circumstance here, where the doctor is about to kill the baby. He's complicit. The mother is greatly at fault. Obviously, the main culprit. You can't kill her, or you'll kill the baby. But the nurse whips out some pepper gas or something and shoots the doctor in the face with the stuff. Say it's a partial birth abortion. The baby's about to be born. She's clearly going to be able to save the baby's life. So she knocks the guy out. She delivers the baby. The mother is obviously not in a condition to run away at that point. And the baby's life is saved. The doctor's on the floor screaming and yelling and going to fire the nurse. But I think she's acted justly by incapacitating the doctor in this case.
Joe, here's the thing. In this country, the people have the power to change the law. And, you know, I think that really what's happened in the abortion situation is that, for the most part, the Christians of this country have sat back lethargically and have not exercised their God-given liberties in this nation and have insisted that their political representatives in the legislature and in the executive branches of government live up to their constitutional duty and put a stop to this. And see, that's the thing. I mean, we, the people, still are the ultimate power in this country when we choose to exercise it. And by that I mean through our elected office holders. And we've not done that. I mean, the pastors haven't done that. The churches haven't done that. The Christians at large haven't done that. And so what you have now is you have, you know, people like yourself, I take it, and people like, others, like on the extreme case of Eric Rudolph, who are now trying to act independent of law. They're trying to act and that's just not the way it's going to be done. It's going to be done when the Christians and the other morally minded people of this country begin to wake up and exercise their God-given responsibilities in this land and insist that their elected officials obey the Constitution and take this ghastly law off the books.
Well, this is
that can be done and that should be done.
This is a great conversation, and we appreciate your remarks. And obviously, please don't align us here or me with Rudolph, because we would not go for vigilante justice. We're just talking about the one extreme case where I think that it is consistent to behave that way, but maybe you don't. It's a great conversation. But I tell you what, Chuck, we're coming up to a quick station break, and we're going to be back in just a couple minutes. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and you can call us this morning if you want to talk to Chuck or I and get in on the conversation at 864-244-8177. Now, we know some of you are shy, don't like to call in, especially when you call us later or write us and say, well, we just loved listening. We didn't want to interrupt you talking with your guest, John. That's why we didn't call in. Go ahead and call this morning. Feel free to do so. We'd love to hear your thoughts and comments about the whole issue of abortion, this maniac Rudolph and what he did. So if you want to give a call to the show, again, the number is 864-244-8177, 864-244-8177. Again, you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be right back.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. Edmund Burke.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals. That's npros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
In Common Sense, Thomas Paine writes, "Could we take off the dark covering of antiquity pertaining to the origin of kings and of the state and trace them to their first rise, we should find the first of them nothing better than the principal ruffian of some restless gang, whose savage manners or preeminence subtly obtained him the title of chief among plunderers, and who by increasing in power and extending his depredations overawed the quiet and defenseless to purchase their safety by frequent contributions."
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back into Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We're so glad you've joined us this morning on the Tyranny Response Network. This is a Christian Worldview show, but also enjoyed by many who are non-Christians. We're so happy that you're listening to the show if you're just a lover of liberty. We would encourage you, however, to think deeply about the message of the Bible and what Jesus Christ has to say to you in your life. We are not a show primarily dedicated to preaching, but we're happy and happy about the gospel, and we're certainly not ashamed of the gospel. And we'd like to encourage you to consider the claims of Christ on your life today. We have with us a wonderful guest this morning, which is Pastor Chuck Baldwin, who is the former vice presidential candidate for the Constitution Party. And we've been having a rousing discussion this morning about abortion and about the Rudolph issue that has gone to trial in Birmingham and down in Atlanta. And we want to continue that. We want to talk a little bit about civil disobedience. Oh, before I forget, if you happen to be getting ready for work and wondering about the weather this morning, it's about 44 degrees outside here in Greenville. It's going to get up only to 64 today. We're going to have some showers this morning tapering off, so make sure you bring some rain gear with you if you're going to be going out early. But after that, should be partly cloudy skies, a little bit cool, but otherwise a nice spring day. But anyway, Chuck, welcome back onto the air. Appreciate your comments earlier.
Thank you, John.
And while I was reading also this book my wife picked up this book last night, I hadn't read for a number of years, Francis A. Schaeffer, A Christian Manifesto, and Chapter 9 is entitled The Use of Force. And I just wanted to read a paragraph out of this. I thought it was quite fascinating. He says, "There does come a time when force, even physical force, is appropriate. The Christian is not to take the law into his own hands and become a law unto himself. But when all avenues to flight and protest have closed, force in the defensive posture is appropriate. This was the situation of the American Revolution. The colonists used force in defending themselves. Great Britain, because of its policy toward the colonies, was seen as a foreign power invading America. The colonists defended their homeland. As such, the American Revolution was a conservative counter-revolution. The colonists saw the British as the revolutionaries trying to overthrow the legitimate colonial government. A true Christian in Hitler's Germany and in the occupied countries could have defied the false and counterfeit state and hidden his Jewish neighbors from the German SS troops. The government had abrogated its authority, and it had no right to make any demands. This brings us to the current issue that is crucial for the future of the church in the United States, the issue of abortion. What is involved is the whole issue of the value of human life. A recent report indicates that for every 3 live births, 1 child is aborted. Christians must come to the children's defense, and Christians must come to the defense of human life as such. This defense should be carried out on at least 4 fronts. First, we should aggressively support human life bill or a constitutional amendment protecting unborn children. Second, we must enter the court seeking to overturn the Supreme Court's abortion decision. And remember, I think he's writing this just a few years, maybe 5 or 6 years after Roe v. Wade. Third, legal and political action should be taken against hospitals and abortion clinics that perform abortions. In order to operate, many hospitals and abortion clinics receive tax money in some form, at least from individual states. Our representatives must be confronted with political force, or if they will not do so out of principle, into introducing legislation cutting off such funds. If this fails, then lawsuits should be initiated to stop funds flowing to such institutions. Simultaneously with these steps, some Christians have picketed. I greatly admired Dr. William S. Barker, president of Covenant Theological Seminary in St. Louis, when he supported seminary students who had been arrested for picketing an abortion clinic in St. Louis. The Covenant and he goes on, I won't read the whole quote, but he's basically saying nonviolent behavior is right, and if you get jailed for being nonviolent and for protesting, you need to go ahead and do that. I'm going to skip down to the – it's too long of a quote to read here, but he's supporting the students who picketed and did all that sort of passive resistance, even being activists to some extent. And he says, fourth, the state must feel to the presence of the Christian community, and they needed to hear from us as a Christian voice. But then he goes on later on to talk about when you can actually have violence involved. Now, this is the big question, because in the beginning – I'm not going to read the rest of the quotation. It's enough for us to start here, I think, Chuck. He's basically saying that you can get pushed so far, you keep using your legal recourse, you redress grievances, you write to the parliament in London, you tell the king he's not doing his job, he's violating his contract, and at some point you push the button and you fight. You pick up arms and you attack the state. Well, Rudolph obviously didn't do this. He did not go through all those proper channels at first. But when would you say, Chuck, is it time for us to say, look, we're fed up with the Republicans or the Republicrats and these jokers, the imposters that are carrying on their activities, and just say, it's time for us to do battle against the federal government, which has become as bad as King George? That's a big question, isn't it? What do you think about that, Chuck?
Well, our founding fathers did that, as you duly noted, with the British government, and then our Southern fathers did that in 1861. When they formed the Confederate States of America, and the war between the states was fought. So, they did basically the same thing. But again, the key there, and I certainly agree with Francis Schaeffer, I'm a big fan of his writings. I think he was perhaps 100 years ahead of his time, tremendous Christian patriot. Everybody ought to read Francis Schaeffer. Anything he writes that he wrote was worth reading. And certainly I agree with the foundation that he established there, and that is that our Revolutionary War was fought, it was not fought by one or a bunch of Eric Rudolphs who were acting independently. It was fought by a legitimate government that had been formed in rebellion to the British government. In other words, we had a congressional Congress. We had state governments through their legislative bodies who voted for the representatives to that Constitutional Convention. All that we read about that, the Franklins, the Washingtons, the whole nine yards. I mean, this was a very deliberate and lawful exercise of resistance. So when that Continental Army took up the muskets against the Crown, they were not doing so as vigilantes, or they were not doing so even as individuals. They were formed into a legitimate fighting force with a legitimate government over them. And that same thing happened in the war between the states. The men who fought for the South were not fighting as individuals. They were fighting as an army with a legitimate government authorizing their resistance. If we are to the point, and when we get to the point that is happening again, it has to be done in a similar fashion. There has to be a state legislature, a state government. There has to be a legitimate lawful authority who has established a resistance army. And until we have that, anything that we would try to do as individuals is unlawful. And I think Schaefer said that exact same thing in the quotes that you just made there. So, you know, again, it has to be done in a lawful manner, which means you have a legitimate government authorizing the use of force. I think that if and when that day ever comes again in America, that there would have to be men such as these who are willing to do that kind of action. And, you know, then and only then are we justified in taking up arms against a government.
Well, this is an excellent conversation. Really appreciate that. By the way, if you're trying to call in this morning, our regular phone line is down this morning, but we have an alternative phone line. Some of you have been trying to call in the old phone line and have not gotten through. It's 864-244-8177. 864-244-8177 is our new phone line this morning. Sorry that we've had this couple technical snafus, and if you've been trying to get through and have been able to, we'll get these worked out as soon as possible. And it's really regrettable that it's happened when Chuck Baldwin has joined us. But even if you're unable to get through, I hope you're able to enjoy us dialoguing at least back and forth on this point. 864-244-8177. And Chuck, let's take this a little further. I don't know what you think about theonomy or the Christian Reconstruction movement, but Dr. Greg Bahnsen, in his book Theonomy and Christian Ethics, Chapter 19, and elsewhere in his book, seems to indicate, well, not seems, he does indicate that Christians can rebel against the state, or as we're talking about, take up arms, as long as there is a lower magistrate that leads them, or another government that would lead them. But I think what you're saying is essentially the same thing. As long as you have another set of government that is already established, set up in contra to the former government that was over you, it's okay to take up arms and collective action. But individuals cannot just do this on their own.
Correct.
And so
that's my position exactly. I do believe that we are not authorized to take up arms against a governing force without the consent of a legitimate government above us. And absent that authority, then our actions in that regard would have to be considered unlawful.
Now, let's take this to another stage. What if you were a slave in the South, for instance, in, say, 1850, and you'd been kidnapped in Africa, brought over here, maybe your own tribesmen kidnapped you first, then they put you on a ship, brought you over here. You were sold into slavery. You didn't want to be, but you were found in a condition of servitude. There's no way you're going to be able to get a government together to take up action against your master or against the state government of any southern state at that time. Would you be justified at resisting the authority that was over you? And furthermore, would those in the North be justified in resisting the fugitive slave law, which requires them to return a slave that runs away from its master? Obviously, there can't be a government involved. Would resistance to the civil authority in that case be justified?
Well, obviously, when it comes to the North, that would be pretty that would be pretty hypocritical of them, because the slave trade was fostered and promoted and carried out in the North. The southern states, there wasn't a single slave ship with a Confederate flag flying above it. Every one of those ships had the stars and stripes on top. The entire slave trade was promoted, carried out by the North. This idea that slavery was a Southern institution is a mockery of history. But obviously the Scripture, I think, speaks to that. We claim to be Christians, so let's go to the Bible.
Right.
You know, what did Paul say in Ephesians and Colossians to the slaves? You know, he told them to obey their masters. Mm-hmm. He told them to serve them as they would serve Christ. You don't find anything in the Scriptures that would indicate that the Holy Spirit inspired the Apostle Paul and any of the other New Testament writers for the slaves of that period to insurrect against their slaveholders.
Well, this is
I mean, you know, what do you do with that as a Christian? I mean, our number one rule of guide is the Bible, and you can't create a law unto yourself claiming to be a Christian, we have to accept the law that's already given to us, and that's the Holy Scriptures. So I don't see anything in the New Testament directly relevant to your question that would authorize, individual use of force in that case.
Well, here,
on the other hand, let's acknowledge that, you know, in the slavery itself, the entire institution was brought to its knees through the lawful mechanisms that our founding fathers put in place in this country. The slave trade ended in 1808, according to the Constitution, and that was when the trade itself actually stopped. Obviously, the practice of slavery continued for several years, even by the time the so-called Civil War was fought.
Well, here,
men like Wilberforce in England and others had already paid the price across the water to bring slavery, to its knees, and that process had already started. Were very active in their opposition to slavery. They belonged to various, organizations that were dedicated to ending slavery in America. And so, the idea that the Founding Fathers were all a bunch of, hate mongers and racists and, all this kind of thing, it's just a distortion of history.
Well,
even there, you see the Christians of that period who were very much against slavery, who understood the issues of liberty and supported it. And, after all, good night, they were willing to fight a Revolutionary War for those principles. They had put in place the mechanisms by which slavery, which had been in existence for thousands of years. Come on, this is not a European creation. Slavery had been around, in fact, it still is around in the Middle East and in African nations. Slavery is still practiced today. But in the Western world, especially after the creation of the United States of America, the principles that were that prevailed after the Revolutionary War, the principles and the values were in place at that point, legally, lawfully, under the government, to end slavery, which is exactly what happened. I don't think it had held anything to do with the war between the states, by the way.
Yeah, and Chuck, if I can interject for just a second, I appreciate those comments. Those of us here at TRN, Christian Worldview, are not under any delusion that war between the states was fought over the slavery issue primarily. And we do not believe that a lot of the poppycock we're taught about Lincoln and so forth in school. So we're with you 100% on that. The question is perhaps more fundamental than that, and let me try to back up for a minute. If you look at R.J. Rush Jr. and what he writes about slavery, there are several kinds of slavery. One, people who were enslaved because they committed a crime. People were enslaved by what we call voluntary servitude. People that were enslaved because of some contractual arrangement. And those who were kidnapped and forced into slavery. It's not clear when Paul is talking about were you a slave, that people were kidnapped into slavery necessarily. Now, there's some question about that if you look at Philemon and also in the book of Ephesians and elsewhere. But the question would be this, more pertinent for you today: let's say you were living there, and your daughter or your son were kidnapped, and they were taken into slavery and forced there. Would you tell them that they could resist? And if they fled to the north, we're not talking about the collective action of the Northerners, which was very egregious and wrong. But let's say you had somebody who wanted to help a slave become free and rebel against the Fugitive Slave Act. Would that person be in sin in the north for helping your daughter to escape the kidnappers who enslaved her? And why would it be any different if your daughter's kidnapped versus an African American or an African, excuse me, being captured and brought over here to America?
Okay, but I guess, John, my question here is, it's okay and good to have these, have these discussions. Are we talking about ending abortion in America? How does that impact what we're trying to do today? I think the discussion started out with abortion and Eric Rudolph's comments and yeah. What he did to, mm-hmm. To try and resist abortion. I think as Christians, we can have all these deep discussions about what we would have done 200 years ago and what if this and what if that. But what are we going to do, John, about stopping abortion on demand in the United States?
Well, this is a great, great comment, Chuck. In fact, we have a caller online we're going to go to, and this is exactly where we want to go, by the way. We are a program for deep thinking, and we're involved, we're interested. That our listeners here are very politically involved. They are voting for either pro-life libertarians or Constitution Party members, and primarily they've abandoned the Republican Party. They're for political change. They're redressing grievances, but they want to know how far and when they can take any additional steps, and that's why it's important for us to consider biblically. We don't want to do anything that's sinful, and so we try to wrestle with these things on Christian Worldview. But before we go back and talk about that again, we have Tony on the line here, and we'd like to welcome Tony to the show. Let's see if we can get him on the air in our new line system here. Tony, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay, your volume's a little low. We're trying to work on getting you up a little higher here. Welcome to the show, Tony. Thanks so much for calling Christian Worldview. How can we help you today?
Yeah, thank you, John. Well, I just wanted, first of all, to preface my statement or my questions, I guess, by saying that we at our church are right now holding the Institute of the Constitution, and we had a really good turnout on Monday, and we've got 11 more weeks to go, and it's been a real fireball kind of a session. I was just excited about what all went on and the participation of the folks and the interest that the majority of the people there had, and we're just looking forward to next week.
Okay, but, appreciate you telling us about the Institute for the Constitution going on there. What else is happening?
Pardon me?
I said, go ahead. Go ahead with your question.
Okay.
Tony.
Well, yeah. And I just wanted to ask this, like a threefold question, I guess, or three questions. First of all, I wanted to ask Pastor Chuck. First of all, what do you think the future of the Constitution Party would be?
Okay, Chuck, I'm going to have to. Apparently, you may not be able to hear the caller's questions, Chuck. And if that's the case, I'm just going to repeat them for you. He's asking Chuck number one. He's got a three-part question. What do you think the future of the Constitution Party will be? Okay, and Tony, go ahead with your second question.
Okay, and then what can be done for us to better compete as Constitution Party members?
And then what can be done for us to better compete as Constitution Party members politically?
Okay.
And go ahead.
The third thing would be a little bit different. Would be what can we do to unmuzzle the pulpits? This has been a terrible thing that's been going on for 50 years now, and we need to do something about it.
Okay, and the third question is, what can we do to unmuzzle the pulpits, a terrible problem that we've had for the last 50 years? Have you got those three questions, Chuck?
I think I do.
Okay. Tony, were there any other questions you had?
No, that's it for now, and I'll let somebody else call in.
I'm sorry, Tony. We apologize for our little technical snafus and not being able to let Chuck hear directly what's being said. But appreciate you calling, Tony, this morning. Those are great questions, and we look forward to hearing what Chuck has to say. Go ahead,
right,
Chuck.
Well, the last question first. If he can figure out the answer to that one, he deserves the Medal of the Year.
Yeah.
How do we unmuzzle the pulpits? I really don't know. This has been one of my, personal crusades. For many, many years. I think the biggest problem we have in America today, John, is the cowardice and the shyness of America's Christian pulpits. I really believe that. If we had a generation of courageous, truthful pulpits, we could change the course of the country almost overnight. Absent that, we're going to continue, I think, in the direction that we're going, which is surely the wrong direction. So I don't know how to do it. Again, if somebody knows how to do it, please let us know, because I've been troubling this for many, many years, and I just don't know what the answer is. As to the future of the Constitution Party, I think the future for the Constitution Party is very bright. Our party is already the third largest political party in this country, and we're only 12 years old, going into our 13th year as a party. So that is a remarkable growth in a short period of time. I believe that in the future that growth is going to continue, and I think that the party is going to become more and more